Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 149. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 149 is introduced by Representative Dan Swanitzer, an act relating to the official mythical creature of Wyoming, declaring the jackalope as the official mythical creature and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 149, State Mythical Creature, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Halverson, Crone, Pieperinen. Those who voted no, Representatives Gay, Hutchings, and Yagi, and is signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 149 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of that bill over to my good friend from House District 43.
Representative Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 149, State Mythical Creature, is an old friend of this body. It passed out of here in 2005, last time we saw it. I will be brief. The bill does state that the jackalope will be Wyoming's state mythical creature. Last time we saw this bill in 2005, a former member of this body put it forward. And for those of you who were here, you will remember that we had jackalopes all over committee room. We had jackalope stuffed animals on the floor, various mounts that circulated. And so why I didn't, you know, bring out all the jackalopes this year, I'm sure they're around this building if you look hard enough for them. We hear a lot, I think several times in the speeches upon Inauguration Day, about mentors in this body. And so the reason I brought this back is one of the mentors that I had, as you'll see in Section 2 of the bill, it's called the Dave Edwards Memorial Act. I served with this good representative for 4 years, my first 4 years. Served on his committee. Also worked with him in the Boy State program. He ran I ran the House, he ran the Senate, and that's where I really got to know the former representative who served with me. And so he was a very colorful individual, a very moving life story that hopefully many of you who met him heard about his time growing up in the state, how he turned his life around, how he became a fighter pilot, had I think the seventh most amount of takeoffs from aircraft carriers in the history of the U.S., one more takeoff and landing, and had a great story about the night he spent in the ocean after being shot down. So I did bring this bill back as a memorial to him and kind of the impact he made on me and to other members of this body. The bill states in 83-124, we are establishing a state mythical creature, and the jackalope, despite its name, is a jackrabbit with deer antlers throughout Wyoming at gift shops, sporting events, social clubs, watering holes, and on postcards to be established as the official mythical creature of Wyoming. This is actually an important bill. There is an economic and a tourism-based aspect. We've all heard of that monster in a loch in a country to the east. We've heard about a creature up in the northwest part of the U.S. that has a really big foot. And mythical creatures are a pretty big deal lately. I was at the bookstore here in town, and they have four sections devoted to what they call teen paranormal romance, which is all about vampires and werewolves. And I think anytime you go to a movie theater or TV anymore, you're finding a mythical creature, documentary, movie, love story. And so there are some parts in the state, namely two communities that really do celebrate the jackalope as being important to the tourism industry. Both of these communities have very large statues of jackalope that they celebrate, and it helps with their tourism and economic development by selling jackalope stuffed animals. So I'd be very happy to answer any questions people have on this bill. And
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just being somebody from the county to the north of the home of this creature, I wondered from the sponsor how he knew that this was a mythical creature.
Representative Zwanzer, if you want to take that now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this morning in the Ag Committee, we talked about the sage grouse possibly being a mythical creature. And then for those of you who were there this morning, it was a very enlightening conversation. I think that I've seen some of these before, some nights when I've partied up too much, and so I've seen them on mounts, as many of you have around that were brought down in 2005. People have captured these, and there's various mounts around of their heads. So maybe they do exist, but I was going to try to find some to bring into the body today, but the Sergeant of Arms wouldn't let me because they might get loose and we'd all have some problems.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker, on and for this particular bill for two reasons. Number one, I ask you to contemplate the plight of this astounding animal that it hasn't had the chance to see the light of day. And secondly, for purely selfish reasons, I have yet to see a live one. And because they are so rarely seen, I have, as I understand it now, I believe it's partly because they haven't been properly acknowledged in this House. So again, I ask on and for this bill.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a question for the bringer of the bill. Why doesn't he see the jackalopes that are all around here? I'm a little concerned about him.
Representative, or Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I have seen live jackalopes. And but I just wanted to explain to the body that I never vote in favor of these kind of bills. I never voted for the state butterfly. I never voted for the state color. I won't vote for the state gun, and I'm not going to vote for the state mythical creature just because I'm a curmudgeon.
Representative Zwanitzer, did you want to answer Representative Conley's question?
Question has been called. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Davison's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 149 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. House Bill 149 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, please move House Bill 62 down between House Bill 61 and House Bill 147.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 56. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 56, as introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to environmental quality, designated in statute the Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System, providing for submittal of fees for a Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit before processing and issuance of the permit and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Cannaday, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, is signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to turn the introduction of the bill over to the good chairman, or the good representative from Washakie, and he will pass the gauntlet after that.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, to do so with the recommendation of House Bill number 56 do pass, and in the interest of cooperation and in the spirit of such, I'm going to turn this over to my good friend, the Minority Whip, for an explanation. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I bring you, brothers and sisters of the 62nd House Bill 56. It is a great little bill. It has to do with the Wyoming Discharge Pollution Elimination System. Basically, it is a small bill, makes one or two changes. And I'm going to skip the boilerplate and go down right to Section A and read from you Section A, where it says the department shall implement a surface water point, a surface discharge fee permit system for each. And then we have changed that, struck that to read just permit, and kept the pursuant to Wyoming Statute 3511302. And we've struck the remainder of that line. We go to page 2, and says the department shall increase the annual permit fee of $100 for each wildland pollution discharge elimination system permit for each permit authorized held by a person under Wyoming Statute 35301. Basically, what we are doing is just increasing a fee and making sure that the fee is gatherable, and those people who are doing this work understand that the fee is if they do multiple locations, they have to take out multiple fees. So, and then we'll skip down to the next section underneath that. The new language is all payment of fees shall be received prior to the processing and issuing of a permit. Permit fees shall not be prorated, and they are non-transferable, which means if the individual who originally does the work in one area cannot transfer it to a subcontractor or anybody that works for him in another area without getting a new permit. Permit fees shall not be, prorated and are non-refundable. And let me see, the department shall prepare a biennium report on the fee system and report to the Joint Minerals to see how well this is working. And it's really basically a simple little bill. What it does is address the fee structure in multiple locations that a person would need when he does work that involves things that would get into the water pollution, such as dust, pesticides, and those sort of things in the process of doing his work. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Any questions for the minority whip? Seeing none, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 56 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. House Bill number 56 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 108. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 108, as introduced by Representative Wallace, an act relating to agriculture, creating the Wyoming Food Freedom Act, exempting certain sales from licensure, certification, and inspection, providing definitions, providing conforming amendments, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 108, Food Freedom Act, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparic, Reeder, Throne, and Wilson. It is signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Green, Vice Chair of the Labor Committee. I knew you wanted to speak. I could just see it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 108 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And Mr. Speaker, I ask the good speaker from Campbell County to speak on the bill.
All right. Thank you. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 62nd, I bring to you House Bill 108, the Food Freedom Act. And for those of you who are new, this is a bill that, thank you very much. That's exactly what I was looking for. The Food Freedom Bill allows for the sale and consumption of homemade foods, encourages the expansion and accessibility of farmers markets, ranch, farm, home-based sales, and producer to informed in consumer agricultural sales. And basically what this bill does is it provides an exemption from any kind of licensing, inspection, or certification so long as it is a single transaction between a producer and an informed in consumer, meaning that it's not sold again, establishes and that it's only used in a private home, and it establishes that any informed end consumer purchasing goods under the Act assumes the risk, the inherent risk of purchasing or ingesting of foods under the Act. Mr. Chairman, I'll kind of go through the bill briefly, and then we do have a series of amendments to deal with, a standing committee amendment, and then a committee of the whole amendment by the chairman, who is absent, so I'll handle that as well, if that's permissible. And
great, Jim, thanks.
Okay, so first, let's dispatch with the standing committee amendment, which simply throughout the bill, wherever you see the word product, as in it says over and over again, there will be references to foods or products. And the point was brought up in the committee that there are a lot of things sold at farmers markets, from Afghans to homemade furniture to craft goods to, you know, goofy wigs made out of yarn, and that those things are not covered under this bill. So the committee decided to insert food in front of that, so it would say food or food products. And a couple of other minor language changes. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on the standing committee agreement or the standing committee amendment, I would just call for the question on that.
Is that a question on
the standing committee amendment?
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. You've heard the question on the standing committee. All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment has passed. Now, Representative Wallace, I've just been informed that because Chairman Harvey is the only person on that committee of the whole amendment, that'll have to be withdrawn without objection, and she'll have to bring that as a second reading amendment. So without objection, that will be withdrawn. Representative Wallace.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The guts of this bill, there are a few definitions on page 2 and a place on the bottom of page 2 that the standing committee amendment kind of cleaned up the language on, but really where the guts of this bill began are on page 3, beginning on line 13, where it talks about the purposes, the exemptions, and the assumption of risk. And so the purpose is to allow for the sale and consumption of homemade foods and to encourage the expansion and accessibility of farmers markets, ranch farm, home-based sales by this laundry list of things. Number one, facilitating the purchase and consumption of fresh and local agricultural products. Number two, enhancing the agricultural economy. Number three, providing Wyoming citizens with unimpeded access to healthy food from known sources, meaning you know your farmer, you know your rancher. Line six, notwithstanding any other provisions of law, there shall be no licensure, permitting, certification, inspection, packaging, or labeling required by any state governmental agency or any agency of any political subdivision of the state which pertains to the preparation, serving, use, consumption, or storage of foods or food products under the Wyoming Food Freedom Act. Nothing in this article shall preclude an agency from providing assistance, consultation, or inspection when requested by the producer. So nothing in this act prevents any producer from going, making that next step and becoming more commercial so that they can sell in more places. But the restrictions on this are what follows beginning on line 16, that transactions under this section, here's the requirements. They can only be between the producer and the informed end consumer. They can only be for home consumption. They can only occur in Wyoming, and they cannot involve interstate commerce. Those conditions, of course, in part, are to address the threat of the federal government saying that they have the ability to regulate all sales of any kind when it comes to food within the state of Wyoming. And so many of you have probably seen, I sent around and had put on your desks a letter to the Attorney General, which I don't know how long it will take to get that answer, but basically we're just specifically asking this question of our Attorney General saying, based on these parameters and based on the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, can the federal government come in and regulate private transactions between individuals inside the state of Wyoming? We'll see what the answer to that is later. Then on the remainder of page 5 is really kind of referring back to other places that already exist in our state law and in our food rule. Subparagraph D is talking about raw, unprocessed fruits and vegetables, which of course are openly available at farmers markets and lots of other places. And because they are not potentially hazardous, that food generally does not have to be labeled, licensed, packaged, except as otherwise required by law. And number E, for the specific circumstance that it's at a farmer's market. Now remember, a farmer's market is simply a place where individual producers gather from time to time, usually every weekend in the summer or a certain day on the week, and sell stuff to people who want to come through the farmer's market. So it's still a single transaction between a producer and an informed end consumer. But it is possible that someone could be wandering through the farmer's market and that they could potentially buy something there that they did not realize had been made in somebody's home kitchen. And that they could possibly be under the misconception that all food was produced in a commercial licensed kitchen. So this just says, if you're selling it at a farmer's market, you need to put up a little sign or some other notification so that you make sure that everyone who's buying your product that you've made at home knows that you made it at home and it wasn't made under inspection. And then on line 13F, this is referring back to an existing piece of legislation we passed a few years ago that dealt with not potentially hazardous food, which is basically baked goods and jams and jellies, the kind of stuff that you can leave on your counter for months and it won't make you sick. And at that point, we changed the law so that those products could be made in a private home kitchen and could be sold at a farmer's market without any of the labeling. And that's just referring to that and reaffirming that. On line 18, subsection G, about nothing in this article shall be construed to impede the Department of Health in any investigation of foodborne illness. Pretty self-explanatory, except that I would probably make the point that in these situations, unlike a foodborne outbreak where you have hundreds or thousands of people in multiple states being sickened by one product out of a federally inspected large facility, in this case, you have a very short chain. If you get sick, you know where you got it. And it's a really easy thing to do those investigations. Line 22, nothing in this article shall be construed to change the requirements for brand inspection or animal health inspections. This is stuff that those of us in the livestock business know very well. If you slaughter an animal, you still have to have the brand inspections and the proper health certificates. And that stays the same. This does not change any of that. Then on page 6, this is a new provision in the bill this year that actually came to light while we were holding public hearings around the state this summer on some promulgated rules from the Department of Agriculture in regards to milk and eggs and leafy green vegetables and things. And what we did was we took the notion, the concept from another statute that's already on our books that deals with the inherent risks of being around horses, or, you know, at stables and arenas that, we have a law on the books that says if you go play with large animals, that you accept the inherent risk of that activity. So we basically took that notion and we folded it into this food bill so that any informed end consumer purchasing goods or food products under the Wyoming Food Freedom Act assume the inherent risk in the purchase, use, or ingestion of the food or products purchased, whether those risks are known or unknown, and is legally responsible for any and all damage, injury, or death to himself or other persons or property that results from the inherent risk of purchasing and eating food. And then on K, a producer is not required to go through all of the expense and the changes of their facilities, the separate sinks, the separate bathrooms for the inspectors, the alterations that have to be done in commercially licensed facilities. Remember that by definition, no home kitchen can ever be licensed as a commercial food establishment. That's in our law now. So what this is saying is you don't have to change your home to accommodate those kind of changes. And then finally, this kind of goes back to subsection J. We have subsection M, which says actions based upon negligence, wherein the damage, injury, or death is not the result of the inherent risk, you can still be sued for that. So if you do something really egregious, you're still on the hook. And then finally, on page 7, there's a little bit of new language added to the definition of a commercial establishment, which most of this is already in our law. Commercial establishment means and includes any place or any area of any establishment that is a wholesale or retail business where food, drugs, devices, and cosmetics are displayed for sale, manufactured, processed, packed, held, or stored. And commercial establishment shall not include. Most of that language exists today. I don't know why it's underlined here. But shall not include any farmer's market or any business or person engaged in transactions pursuant to this statute. And then on page 8, we have license required. The provisions of this subsection shall not apply to a producer selling food directly to the informed end consumer at a farmer's market or by ranch, farm, or home-based sales pursuant to this act. And the definitions shall apply to this subsection. So that, Mr. Chairman, is pretty much the explanation of the bill. And I'll answer questions or I'll start working my way through the committee of the whole amendments, whatever your pleasure is.
Representative Wallace, the committee of the whole amendment has been withdrawn. That'll have to...
Actually, there's several
others. Oh, I'm sorry. Chairman Harvey's has been withdrawn. That's right. Any discussion? Actually, why don't we start on the amendments, so if you want to go through. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we need to do anything official, or is this action to withdraw the standing committee of the whole amendment number one already a done deal?
It's withdrawn.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Number one's withdrawn. Representative Wallace.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 and ask for your favorable consideration. And what the Committee of the Whole Number 2 does is, on the bill, on page 8, after line 12, it inserts a severability clause. And basically what that severability clause says is if any provision of this act or the application thereof to any person or circumstance is held invalid or suspended by order of a court of competent jurisdictions, such action shall not affect other provisions or applications of this act or existing Wyoming law which can be given effect without the invalid provision or application, and to this end, the provisions of this act are severable. The reason I think that this amendment is a great idea to be added to this bill is because there have been concerns raised by some that the federal government might disallow the Wyoming State Meat Inspection Program because Wyoming citizens have given each other the right to buy food, meat specifically, directly from their neighbor. I personally think that is not likely to happen for a number of reasons, but what this clause does is protect our meat processors, because this says that if that should happen, if some federal action or other action would say that was going to affect our meat businesses, that meat could be taken off the table, but everything else would remain under the act. So if you need more detailed explanation, I'm probably going to have to pick on a lawyer, because some of the wording in this is a little more lawyerly than I'm used to. But that's my understanding, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Representative Northrup.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just concerned about the loss of Wyoming's Equal Two status presented by the USDA. We don't want to lose the ability for the meat cutters in Wyoming to not be able to sell and retail meat that is processed in Wyoming to consumers.
Representative Wallace.
Well, I would just offer a couple things. I have become extremely familiar with the federal meat processing laws as a result of unrelated business that I have been in for the last few years. And as a result, I know that by federal law, the USDA is required to provide inspection for all meat sold in the United States of America, except under a couple of conditions. One of those conditions is if there is a state meat inspection program in place, which we have here in Wyoming. We don't have a single USDA inspected facility, but we do have a state meat inspection program. So under that program, our meat processors can process meat, and they are allowed to sell it inside the state of Wyoming. They still can't take it across state lines, but they can sell it in Wyoming. It can be used in restaurants. It can be used in schools. It's basically available to them. And the other reason why they may not be held to that requirement is if there's a custom exemption in place. And a custom exempt processing plant is one that only processes animals for the owner. Lots of you, I know, buy your beef on the hoof, by the half, by the quarter, by the whole, and you send it to a custom exempt shop, and they are required to meet certain standards in their facilities, and they have an inspector in once in a while to look through the place and make sure that it's being handled rightly. But that meat can never be resold. It's always stamped not for sale. So in the unlikely circumstance that the USDA would say, because the Wyoming Food Freedom Act, even though it's just a private transaction between two individuals, that's still sale of meat. Therefore, your state meat inspection program no longer meets the requirements to qualify as a state meat inspection program, and we're jerking your eligibility. They would be required to provide inspection at our facilities. They don't have the budget. They don't have the personnel. I don't think that that would be something that they would step up to the plate to do. That's probably the main reason why I don't think it's likely that that would happen. And then, of course, we have the 10th Amendment considerations, where we're talking about private transactions between individuals inside the state of Wyoming, not in interstate commerce. And I think that is something that can be defended and defended vigorously. And then, if all of that fails and we still have a situation where they do come in and it's going to impact our meat processors, we've got this severability clause that says, okay, it's been declared invalid. They're going to pull the qualifications and impact our meat businesses. We'll just take meat off the table. But the law still stands for everything else.
Any further debate or discussion on the House Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2? Question has been called. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Amendment passes. Representative Wallace, if you could move to a Committee of the Whole Amendment 3.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 and ask for your favorable consideration. So, the aforementioned letter to the Attorney General, having landed on your desk, we have a situation that could possibly result in some litigation. And what this amendment would do is simply park $250,000 in a fund that would be available to the Attorney General should the need arise that we would need to defend our industries or some other facet of this bill, and if it's not used, it reverts. And if there's no further questions, I would call for the question.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment gives me some pause as far as this bill. I mean, if we're that on that shaky a ground that we need to have a $250,000 legal fund set aside in case we're going out on a limb here. You know, I've always voted for these food freedom bills the sponsors brought in the past, but I don't ever remember seeing this in any other bill before. And I don't remember seeing this in any bill we've passed, saying that, you know, we're on shaky ground here, and in case we are, we're going to give the Attorney General $250,000 to defend our exposure here. So I urge caution, not only with this amendment, but I guess now I urge caution on the bill.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would not be opposed to second reading amendments changing the amount. I'm not married to that amount. I think it's just something that needs to be there. But I would point out that we as a body have parked funds specifically for litigation over lots of different issues, over rivers, over environmental issues, over, I can't, you know, I'm redistricting. We had a amount of money to deal with possible litigation over that. So that is a situation that we often do.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the good bringer of the bill actually sort of answered what I was going to say. We've done this in the past. It's actually a pretty good savings account because if they don't use it, it just reverts back to us. So it's not like the money actually got spent. And we did it with the ACA 2 years ago. I think we put about $100,000 away. He ended up actually spending none of that money, and so that all reverted back to us. And really the only – I'll tell you where we've used it, I think, is in water litigation because, you know, downstairs they work for a salary. So if they need to defend something, he just tells one of the attorneys, go defend this. So in reality, you really don't need any money. The problem becomes – when you get into such something so specialized that you need to go find an attorney that's outside of the AG's office, specifically water law, when we've had the water litigation in the past, we've gone and hired lawyers outside of the AG's office. In this case, I assume what the bringer of the bill is looking at is potentially someone's going to challenge under interstate commerce that the federal law applies. I don't see. I thought she drafted it really well. That's not going to happen, but you know it could happen. And so you appropriate the $250,000. If it doesn't get spent, it all reverts back to us anyway.
Chairman Madden.
Well, then I got a question for one of the two of you. What if we didn't have this in there and they, you know, there's an action brought against the state for this bill or any bill that we pass, and we don't have this in there? I mean, there's a procedure in the AG's office that allows those suits to be pursued, right? I mean, otherwise we'd have to have this in almost everything we do. We'd have to put a park some money for in case we're doing something wrong. So I still don't understand why that has to be in there in this bill any more than any other bill.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give you the real answer. Sometimes it scares people away. If they see that we're that committed to the bill, that this is such an important issue to all of us, that we've parked that much money, it causes people that might want to challenge it to second think it and say, gosh, that's a state that's really committed to this idea. I'm not sure if I want to take on somebody who has a war chest of $250,000.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment has drawn some considerable attention, and in reading it and rereading it, the amount of money, which I won't argue with, to be used for legal and related costs incurred in any litigation arising from this act. Then we have a hold harmless that is actually spelled out on page 6, subsection J and subsection K. I think there's support for what the Freedom Act was intended to be relative to ability to contract with one another, but then to step in and have the state have a preface of holding harmless is due to the ability to sue for anything or to provide state defense for any action. It seems to me that's a little bit broader than maybe it would be normally acceptable.
Representative Walls.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that I would just simply invite the previous speaker to propose a language that would more narrowly define it to what the intention was, which was not to hold this money for suits in regards to individual producers, but to have it in reserve for the protection of the entire industry.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Amendment fails. Moving on to, I'm sorry, go ahead. Division. All those in favor of the amendment, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. More than 14. Moving on to the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 4. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we consider Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 4 and the final amendment on this bill. And this one approaches the situation from a little bit different angle. And what this does is allow for a Wyoming State meat inspector to be present in a custom-exempt processing facility in order to allow for the sale of meat under these very limited circumstances. So remember, custom-exempt means you own the animal before it's processed, and then it only goes back to you. So this is the meat that most of us, I don't know how many of you, but I think a good number of you probably eat meat under this system. And I would suggest to you that while I don't have a scientific study or the data to show you, I believe that the meat that we have processed for our own use is, in fact, the finest quality and the safest that there is, and that there, the incidence of any disease or sickness from that meat is minuscule. So what this would allow for is, so long as there was a state meat inspector present in the plant, the day that the meat was processed, that meat could also be sold in a individual-to-individual sale or at a farmer's market, again, in an individual-to-individual sale. And it gives the department that would be responsible for doing this the ability to promulgate some rules that would be made necessary to carry this out.
We're on committee of the whole, amendment number 4. Any further discussion or any discussion? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of committee of the whole, amendment number 4, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. Back on the bill. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the, as she said, tenacity in bringing this bill. I think this is our third attempt at this, or maybe even the fourth. But this has been looked at, and when we first looked at it, if you'll remember, it was really something that we were skeptical of. We had our departments very, very skeptical of it, and it was defeated and kind of went away, but then it just came back again. And all of a sudden, I got involved with it because we were having a local celebration, and 4th of July or whatever it was, Strawberry Days or whatever. And we were having a big kind of a community barbecue. And all of a sudden, somebody told us we had to have the Department of Ag there. We had to have the watermelons washed. We had to have the drinks in this. We had to have thermometers in the meat. And so I got involved a little bit with this and called the Department of Ag and got the right guy. And we talked back and forth quite a bit on this. And then we finally decided that that wasn't what the department wanted to do. They did not want to get into this, our local celebrations. So that kind of went away. And then it came back again. Had some constituents that just had a cow, and they had too much milk, so they were selling it to their neighbors. And my grandkids had some chickens, and neighbors came over and were buying, and all of a sudden, the milk, the eggs, and the green leafy vegetables got into this. And so again, I started calling our departments and trying to figure out what was going on, and talked with the bringer of this bill, who was again very much involved with this. So this bill that you have before you has been vetted many times, has had numerous inspections. Oh, that's a good word for this one. They've looked over it and looked over it. And while in the testimony in the committee, nobody was jumping up and down with it, I felt the less of their desire to not have this move forward. So I just really stand in favor of this. I think it's been looked at. I think we've got numerous additions into it that make it very safe and for our, like I say, the kids that are having these animals and these vegetables, and I just think it's a good idea. I just don't like the interference into our lives with our own government, and I think the precautions have been made in this bill, hopefully to satisfy them, but also to make it a little more clear for people who go to these markets or buy these products that they are doing this, you know, because they want to do it. And, boy, I do stand up for a little bit of the safety of the food that we're eating. I'm not sure I've really had salmonella outbreaks out of the processed meat that I've bought from a 4-H pig or beef at a fair and taken it. But I have been concerned with buying hamburger out of a store. So I think we're safer And this bill has really gone out of its way. I appreciate the bringer sticking with it, trying to come up with the concerns that have been brought up by numerous people, groups, and government. And I think this is a very good bill, and I would appreciate you considering this final time being able to vote for it.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a co-sponsor on this bill. I've been in the Ag Committee for 6 years, and it's been there in the past. I think I voted against it every year. But this time, it's ready for prime time. I urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise in opposition to this bill. I have a few concerns. As I read it, there are no limits in this bill as to what foods can be sold without regulations such as milk or other dairy products, meats, meat products, canned goods, which are susceptible to botulism, and botulism can be fatal. Also, as I read it, House Bill 108 does not set conditions for production, storage, or transportation of these foods, which is of a concern to me. Furthermore, as I read it on page 2 in the delivery section, the bill claims to limit the direct sales and transactions between the original producer and the final consumer, but in that section, the producer's designee or agent and also at any location agreed to, I think you could potentially allow for the distribution to a wholesaler or in an extreme situation selling food in out of your trunk on the street. So that has some major concern for me. Also, I understand the cottage food industry has grown here in the state of Wyoming over the last several years, but I think there's already protections in place to allow that growth to continue. With this bill, the way I read it anyhow, the sale of any food by any person, any location, any time with no regulatory oversight is what would occur, and that really concerns me. Thank you. Again, I rise in opposition to this bill.
Any further debate? Representative Wallace.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the bill specifically applies only to private transactions between two individuals, cannot be resold. The bill specifically says the food cannot be resold, so therefore it cannot go to a wholesaler in any way, shape, or form. And as regards to the designated agent, what that means in plain rancher language is you can get your hired man to haul the beef to town to deliver to the person who bought the beef. And the insinuation that we are hereby opening up the entire state of Wyoming is not correct. This food cannot be served in a school, cannot be served in a cafe, cannot be provided in a store, cannot be sold any place where there is any intermediator whatsoever. This is what this bill is about, folks. Either you have the right to buy the food you want to eat and the food you want to feed your family, or you don't. Pure and simple. Vote accordingly. Mr. Chairman, I'd call for the question.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Green's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 108 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 108 has passed the Committee of the Whole. 1 hour of debate for 4 no votes. Moving on. Representative Larson, in privilege of the floor.
Mr. Chairman, my good friends of the 62nd Legislature, today we have a very honored guest with us up in the West Balcony, or whatever balcony that is, and Callie Stuckey. Callie is here today on a very special assignment. She's here with her grandparents, Blaine and Kathy Schubman from Riverton, her uncle Travis, and her father Carlo. Callie has Turner syndrome, and she just met with the governor a few minutes ago and had a very serious conversation wherein the governor has proclaimed February to be the Turner syndrome month. And we would like to thank Callie for her serious effort in helping the governor to make that proclamation today, and we honor her of being a member of the House of Representatives today. Thank you, Callie.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 151. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 151, as introduced by Representative Pete Marinan, an act relating to trusts, amending notification requirements for claims of creditors, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 151, Uniform Trust Code Notice of Claims, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye: Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 151 do pass. And I turn over the explanation to the good gentleman from House District 49.
Representative.
I hope this doesn't generate the discussion the previous bill did. This is a very common sense bill. House Bill 151 is a bill relating to trust, amending notification requirements for the claims of creditors as it is relative to the settlement of estates. Currently, a creditor has 120 days after the second publication in a newspaper to make a claim in a trust. This bill would change it's 120 days after the first publication of a notice in a newspaper to make a claim, aligning it to be consistent with what they already do with wills. That way, both wills and trusts will have the same notification time period, alleviating any confusion that has happened in the past. I urge the adoption of the bill.
Any debate or discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Bill number 151 do pass, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries. House Bill 151 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 167. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 167 is introduced by Representative Nicholas. An act relating to judicial retirement, modifying mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court and District Court judges, imposing a mandatory retirement age upon Circuit Court judges, making the act contingent upon passage of a constitutional amendment as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 167, Judicial Retirement Age, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye: Representative Baker, Connolly, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt. One no vote, Representative Gingrey, and it is signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 167 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the good representative from Laramie County.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this bill is pretty straightforward. We're just essentially increasing the term of a district court judge and the Wyoming Supreme Court justices to the age of 70 to 75. We're also including circuit court judges now who don't have any term limitation in terms of how long they can participate. This bill also goes in tandem, by the way, with the bill that was brought by another representative from Laramie County, which requires a constitutional amendment in order to, or may require a constitutional amendment in order to change terms of certain judiciary members. So with that, I would move for support of the bill.
Any further discussion? Do I hear the question?
Question.
The question being called on
Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I do so with the recommendation that House Bill 167 do pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 167 has passed to the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 178. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 178, as introduced by Representative Crone, an act relating to criminal procedure providing for release of the name of the alleged actor in a sexual abuse violation as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, the Committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 178, Sexual Assault Disclosure, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Connolly, Gingrey, Croker, Crone, and Walters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Miller, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 178 do pass, and I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good gentleman from Cody.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. I think it's important to start with a brief explanation of a little bit of criminal procedure. First of all, there's really three types of cases in Wyoming. There are juvenile cases that involve minors that are held in the juvenile court. Those are always confidential. So any actor that's involved in a juvenile case in Wyoming is it's a confidential case. There's misdemeanor cases in Wyoming, which means that it's a case where the penalty is not less than, or it would be not more than 1 year of incarceration and not more than $1,000. All misdemeanor cases in Wyoming are public record, public knowledge, and have the ability for anyone to go into the open public courtroom and find out any information about that case. The third type of case in Wyoming is a felony case, and those cases are the most serious cases. There are cases where the incarceration is over 1 year and up to life in prison, and also more than a $1,000 fine. Now, all felony cases in Wyoming are public. They are open to the public. They are of record, except for one category of case, and that's sexual assault cases. And in those cases, the defendant is confidential for a period of the proceeding, from the time that it's filed to the time it gets to district court. Now, the victim remains confidential in sexual assault cases throughout the entirety of the case, but the alleged actor or the defendant is confidential for a period of time. So other than the juvenile cases that are presented in juvenile court that are always confidential, the only criminal case in Wyoming that's not public or the defendant's not public are in those sexual assault type cases. So let me just walk through a little bit of the procedure in terms of how a felony case proceeds. So if felony information is filed, it's filed in the circuit court. The information is presented to the circuit court judge. The defendant is given an initial appearance. At that initial appearance, the defendant's read his rights. The defendant is told what the maximum minimum penalties are, and a preliminary hearing is set. Also, bond is set at that initial appearance. Now, that preliminary hearing, by rule, if the defendant's in custody, has to be held within 10 days, or if the defendant's out of custody, within 30 days. But that the defendant has the right to waive those rule requirements. So oftentimes, that's what happens. You have the preliminary hearing that's set off into the future. So from the time in a sexual assault case, from the time the information's filed, the defendant's name is confidential. Some courts in the state make all of the record confidential. So there's no one has any information about what type of crime it was, what the facts and circumstances are, until after that preliminary hearing. The preliminary hearing is basically a probable cause hearing, where the state would show that probable cause exists that a crime was committed and that the defendant committed that crime. So from that preliminary hearing to the district court, all of that information about the defendant, and often cases in many courts, all of the information about the nature of the crime is confidential. So you could have a period of a month, you could have a period of 6 weeks, you could have a period of 2 months where someone is charged with a very egregious crime, and no one in the public knows about that. It's the only crime in Wyoming that that's the case. And I would submit to this body that that's not good public policy. that it, sexual assault cases should be handled just like murder cases, should be handled just like kidnapping cases, should be handled just like aggravated assault cases. If someone's charged with a crime, it should be public knowledge. People in the community should know about that. People in the community should also know about what the fact pattern is. Now, of course, defendants in the state of Wyoming have the presumption of innocence. That has not changed. That presumption stays with them until a conviction or until a plea. And this bill wouldn't change that presumption. It would just basically put make this in conformity with every other criminal case and that's a felony or a misdemeanor where the defendant's name is known and where the information regarding the crime would be public. So I would urge your aye vote on the bill. I think that it's the public's right to know, and I think that it's good public policy. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to this bill. There's a couple of things I'd like to point out. One, I feel like if my neighbor is to assault somebody, there's not a good chance of retaliation. But if they're accused of sexual assault, there's a huge chance of retaliation. There's a target on individuals. As soon as these accusations come out, there's a target put on their back. These cases are different. They're treated differently throughout the system, and these prisoners are treated differently once they're incarcerated. They're given special protection because there's a target put on their back. Secondly, I want to point out that the judge decides, in all cases, who's a danger to society. So if the judge feels that someone's a danger to society, he has that option of keeping that person incarcerated until these hearings are processed. It's important that we understand that there's a difference between groomers and grabbers. This has been pointed out in a number of our committee meetings. 5% of these sexual assault cases involve individuals that are grabbers, somebody that's just going to come up off the street and grab somebody. 95% of these cases are groomers. They're done by somebody who knows the victim. Secondly, I heard a statistic after the hearing that 3% of these cases actually lead to conviction, which is alarming to me. So if you're talking about 97% of these cases that don't end up in conviction, you're talking about 97% of people that have now been labeled and put a target on their back. I think it's a huge detriment if somebody is one of these labels is put on them. It can ruin their life whether they're convicted or not. So I think we have to take caution. And the notion that these cases aren't any different than anything else is I think, absurd to me because they really are. And I think we would all understand that they are different. And I'd also just like to point out that the reason that this is already in statute is there's precedence. People before us have found that these cases aren't like other cases. This isn't just a coincidence that this has been left in. The people have thought about doing this before, and it's been looked at, and there's reason that these cases are given special protection. Lastly, I'd just like to point out a comparison in my mind, the death penalty. Are we going to go ahead and keep the death penalty in and take the chance that we're going to execute one innocent person? Are we going to look at the fact that, hey, we want to make sure that we're protecting individuals' rights and their presumption of innocence? Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not speaking for or against the bill. I just have a question. On page 2, line 7, 8, 9, 10... and 6, line 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. We're speaking of somebody who's been arrested for this kind of a crime, and yet in this language they're called the actor. The actor's name may be released to the public to aid or facilitate an arrest. The actor's name may also be released for any other reason if the release of the name is not reasonably likely to disclose the identity of the victim. And so what I'm asking in this is this, when you say actor's name, is that presuming that they're guilty before they even have a chance? Now, you guys all know I'm not an attorney, so I'm just asking that question because when I look at this, it looks like we're writing into law that they're already the actor before there has actually been a presumption.
Representative Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is just a term of art. It does not affect that person's presumption of innocence. The presumption of innocence would still stay with that person. An actor does not mean that that person is presumed guilty. Hopefully that answers your question. Okay, you want to? I guess maybe I misunderstood your question.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, now, these folks that are convicted of these crimes, they deserve what they have coming to them. Don't get me wrong here, but we've got to get people convicted. My concern on this is when we strike this in the first part on line one, we take the alleged actor out. When the alleged actor's in that particular clause, we need the judge to allow us to be able to release that name. You strike it out of that section, now all of a sudden any public official, that could be a sheriff's deputy, it's a jailer, can release that information for a very broad definition for any other reason, as long as it does not disclose the name of the victim. That's just too broad for me. I cannot support this bill. We have these, I think it has been said before, when you're accused of these types of actions, it affects your life even when you're innocent. You still can't get rid of that stigma. I think we need to think about this one long and hard. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a position really at this point on the bill either, but I was always under the impression that this was in the statute simply because when you identify the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, there's always, or usually, or can be a high probability that everyone would also know the victim. So there, in a kind of a roundabout way, I always thought that the reason they didn't identify the perpetrator was that because there's a high percentage of people that are these kind of acts are between people that know each other well, that you're really almost protecting the victim's identity. But I don't know, and I just wonder if there's any validity to what I've been thinking all those years.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My sentiments echo essentially all of those who have gone before. When you consider the idea that in this particular case, for instance, take any of the communities in my district, almost every occasion you would be releasing the name of the victim as well as that of the perpetrator, the proposed perpetrator of the crime. And also that also strikes to a second question we have in front of us. The surrendering of one's rights post-adjudification is one question, but pre-adjudification, where that individual, even if he is declared innocent, in public, he will always be looked at as with suspicion. And so I think there is a lot of damage that could be done by this. I believe the intent is right. These are heinous crimes we're speaking of, but I believe it goes in the wrong direction. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we listen to this, I'm really torn as I hear both sides. The Cody Youth for Justice kids that were out there handed us a handout, and they said this is something that we need, so they were sticking up for this. My question is, and one of the things they brought up is, from the time that the crime occurs, their point was this could be 1 month, 2 months, 3 months before it ever goes to the judge. And the person, and of course they were talking about guilty, but the person who is in the middle of this then is running around and nobody knows anything that happened. And their concern was, how much time are we having? Is this something that can, you know, there was a crime? Is it going to wait 2 or 3 months? And that was, I think, their point. And I thought it was a good point, so I'll bring that up for the bringer.
I have a question.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I
just to, so I have it in my mind, and I'm not an attorney either. We just play one on the weekends. No, just kidding. How are we treating these crimes differently? If we pass this law, will we be treating these crimes the same as we treat, for instance, first degree murder, or are we still going to have a separate class? That's my question.
Representative, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'll just take some of these questions while they're fresh, and I'll begin with the good chairman of education's question. That's the entire point of the bill, is that there's this type of crime is the only crime that we treat differently than anything else. And I hear that, you know, there's certain stigmas that are associated with this particular type of crime, but at the same time, I would submit to the body, if you're charged with aggravated assault and you're found not guilty, or the case goes away, or you're charged with murder, or you're charged with kidnapping, or you're charged with robbery, and the crime goes away, that stigma is going to exist in any type of crime that's that serious. So I hear what folks are saying regarding, or members are saying regarding, oh, well, you're going to have this stigma on your back. But the fact of the matter is, if you're charged with a felony crime, you're found not guilty of a felony crime, or the case is dismissed by the state, you're always going to have that stigma. Every time that you walk around town, folks are going to say, that's the person that was charged with the robbery, and the jury found that person not guilty. So, yes, these are particular types of crimes that can be pretty heinous and pretty brutal and pretty gruesome, and that's the point of this bill. The point of this bill is, if someone's accused of this type of behavior, doesn't the public have the right to know what the fact pattern is, who the defendant is, in just like any other type of crime? So I would submit to the body that the stigma associated with that is it's a balancing act between the public's right to know and the defendant's rights. And this is the only case in Wyoming, in our state, where defendants have a certain class of defendant has more rights than others. So I would begin with that. As to the representative from the county where the water is sweet, I'm not familiar with those statistics. I know that was brought up at the about 97% of the folks are not are never found guilty. I'm not aware of what the fact pattern is, the data on that, the groom versus grab, the 95-5. I'm not familiar with that. I would just ask that if that's the numbers that you're using, if you could cite a source, because I'm not familiar with that data. As to the good chairman of revenues question, the idea of keeping the victim confidential has always been is of utmost paramount in all these types of proceedings. And I think that you're going to have cases where it'll be obvious who the victim is, regardless of the defendant, whether the statute remains the same now or whether we change it. I think you'll also have situations where there is no correlation between the victim and the defendant. But I think that the statute still allows the judge quite a bit of authority in order to protect the identity of the victim. I don't think this change is going to substantially interfere with that, in my view. As to the question as to the amount of time, that's another reason where this bill is being brought. There are periods of time where it's not just a week or 10 days or 30 days. It's 3 months or 4 months where this information is confidential, and this person that's been charged with a very serious crime is out in the community, and people don't know that, and schools don't know that, and neighborhoods don't know that. And I think that the public has a right to know when someone's charged with such an egregious crime. So hopefully I've answered the question so far, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. You need to look at 62319 in the context of what it is. This says that prior to filing the information or indictment in district court, charging a violation of an offense under this article. And you've heard the process. What happens is you are charged, you go to circuit court, you're advised to your constitutional rights, and then the circuit court judge or magistrate, usually the judge, sets a bond. And then they set a preliminary hearing, and the preliminary hearing has to be held within 10 days unless the prosecution and the defendant both waive that 10-day hearing. And at that preliminary hearing, there's a determination of probable cause. which is two things. More likely than not that a crime was committed and that this person is the person who committed that crime. And those are the two determinations. It's a pretty light standard, and it can be proved with with hearsay evidence. You don't even have to have any of the real witnesses testify. You can just have somebody who read a report come in and testify. Then the defendant is bound over to district court. And that is when the indictment or information is filed in district court. So the waiver of the preliminary hearing by the defendant and the state can move that up. If they want that name filed in district court, they can insist on having the preliminary hearing. If the defendant waives the preliminary hearing, it goes right to district court. If the defendant waives a speedy preliminary hearing, then it can get moved on. Okay. So there's still some control within the state, within the state's ability to get this moving into district court if they want that in there. Then you read subsection B. And that says after the filing of the information or indictment in the district court and absent a request to release the identity of the minor victim by the minor or another acting on behalf of the minor, the trial court shall protect the welfare of the minor victim. So all the way through the process, the minor victim is protected. And subsection B we fought over, I don't know, we had three or four hours of floor debate over period of a couple days working on that subsection B when that came up a couple years ago. So the point of the matter is that, and the reason that we created this statute is that just the stigma of being branded as a certain type of person without a finding of probable cause can be as bad or worse than a criminal sentence. And particularly with these kind of crimes, they're the crime of our generation that's the most repulsive, that nobody wants to vote against a bill, that we want to have these people pilloried in the town square after they're convicted. And by all rights, that should happen. But we're talking about people who aren't convicted now, who may be suspected, where there's no finding of probable cause, and we're imposing penalties upon people that can last their entire life. And that's why we created this special statute. You know how we react down here. We do a bad thing, and then we create a statute to fix the bad thing. And so somewhere in our history, we did a bad thing. We released the name of an innocent man and it stuck with that person the rest of their life. So think, and I understand that there are some cases, and I'd be amenable to an amendment that says, upon a determination of a judge that the name can be released, the name could be released early. Those things I'm amenable to. But we have a chance to do great damage to innocent people with this bill as written, and I'd urge lots of concern.
Any further discussion? Representative Crow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to summarize, I think that from a public policy perspective, that we shouldn't have two classes of defendants. So we shouldn't have one class where it's 99% of the crimes, your name is public, and the information contained in the affidavit is public, and then 1% where it's not. And I understand the good speaker's concern about innocent people being charged, but I would submit to the body that if an innocent person's charged with any other crime, there's stigma associated with that as well. And I think that, once again, I would get back to the idea of the balancing test, the public's right to know, the public's right to have the fact pattern, the public's ability to know exactly the nature of the crime, what type of crime, and what the allegations are. This is the only type of crime in Wyoming where that the defendant has an extra level of protection. And so, in summary, I would request and I would ask for your aye vote on this bill.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm in favor of this bill, and I sit on the committee that we heard the testimony regarding it, and I'd like to just point out a couple of additional points that were brought out in that testimony. And again, I agree with the good bringer of the bill in relation to kind of the conversation about stigma. That to start with, when you're talking about someone who's been charged with murder, arson, assault and battery, all of those individual perpetrators or alleged perpetrators can have their name in the paper. What came up as part of the discussion is why treat this particular crime differently? And something that hasn't been mentioned that was talked about in the committee was there was a sense perhaps that victims of these crimes are lying. And that therefore we may need to protect the perpetrators of these crimes because of the fear that the alleged victims are lying. And we had vigorous testimony from several different agencies, for example, who said there is no data that supports that allegation and that we need to put that out of our head. We also had some testimony from law enforcement, and in particular, those that were at the big national parks in the northern part of the state, who talked about their fear and the reality of an alleged perpetrator of one of these crimes could easily cross into kind of a federal boundaries without them having a clue. Because there was no notice in a paper that they follow. They follow notices in paper so that they understand who's coming across into the federal property that they wouldn't know. And so for them that was a problem as well. I do appreciate the good majority floor leader with the good speaker coming up with the possibility of an amendment on second reading that might have something about kind of a judge allowing the release of information. But for whatever, if any of these reasons, I would encourage you to vote aye at this level, and if there's a possibility of a good second or third reading amendment, let's address it again there. So thank you, and again, in favor of the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the first mention I've heard of what's the harm. And that's what I'm really focused on is what's the harm. And that might be an explanation, although I think it's a weak one. But what is the harm that we're trying to prevent? Why is it so important that the name of this individual be released in a context that will besmirch him for life, him or her for life before there's been adequate proof? And my sheriff said to me that he has great reservation about this because it might alter his procedure completely. The great fear on the part of law enforcement is that they'll get it wrong and that they want to be able to charge somebody and at least take them into custody, get the procedure started, but there's great fear that they might have it wrong. And they need additional time to refine their case, to refine their facts, to refine their investigation, and be sure that they have it correctly. So, again, my question is, where's the harm? If this individual is a flight risk or if this individual is likely to reoccur, then bond can be refused. They can't bond out. They can be jailed and held in jail without bond. And so if the bond hearing is the first stage in the proceedings where a judge has an opportunity to take a look at this person and say, is this person a flight risk? Is this person prone to reoccur? If it's so dangerous, such a dangerous individual, such an egregious situation, then bond's going to be refused. They're not going to be on the street. So what's the harm? They're either bonded out because the judge has determined on the preliminary investigation and the information available at that time that there's no reason to hold them in jail, or the judge has said that person needs to stay in jail. Now, the harm just seems minimized to me. So then, if there's no harm, then you get back to this thing about the stigma that's created, the target that's put on an individual's back, the lifelong danger to them against the public's, I don't know, right to know. And granted, the public has a right to know, but an individual has a right not to be permanently damaged by the system unless there's real justification for it. So when I balance all those off,
I think I'm going to have to vote no on this bill. I understand that the public would like to know who these people are. Is it that important that we put a stigma on that person for life? And think about somebody like a football coach. And the instant that goes out, that person is toast. They just are. They're never going to get a job again. They're never going to be treated fairly by the system again. And is it so important to know when a judge has already taken a look at this individual in the bonding context and said either they're a danger or they're not a danger, what is the harm that we are addressing here, which I can't find one at all, and balanced against the stigma and the damage to an individual that would result, and is that so important that we can't wait until the preliminary hearing to find out the identity of the individual? So I would urge you to vote no on the bill.
Representative Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple follow-ups on the good majority floor leader's comments. If that were the case, then maybe we need to do an amendment that says all defendants in all cases should have confidentiality until it gets to the district court. I mean, the purpose of the fact that information is public is because these are very serious crimes. These are very serious circumstances. And as to the harm, obviously, one other thing that I want to mention that from the good floor leader's comments are there will be bond in these cases. There will be bond. The only case in Wyoming where a person can be held without bond is in a capital case, in a murder case. So there'll be some level of bond set, and depending on the means of the defendant, they may be able to reach that bond. So you have someone charged with a very egregious crime, but no one knows exactly what the crime is. No one knows what that defendant is. Nobody knows who the defendant is, that is. And they're out in the community, and nobody knows. Nobody knows. So as to the comments that where's the harm, you have someone charged with a very serious crime that's out in the community, and nobody knows. Well, the good majority floor leader sheriff is opposed to this bill. I know there's multiple sheriffs that are in favor of this bill as well. So I think that law enforcement I don't know if they're split, but I know that there's law enforcement that feels that this is an appropriate bill. So I would be amenable to potentially an amendment on if we could get past the Committee of the Whole, I would be amenable to an amendment that would be similar to what the Speaker said, where it would be determined by a judge whether the name should be released prior to the preliminary hearing, and I would actually bring that on second reading. But I would ask for your aye vote on this, and it looks like we might have another speaker before I call for the question.
Representative Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, a question for the bringer of the bill. Actually, I don't see anywhere where there is a requirement that the name of the actor be released. And in fact, I see two cases where they may be released, very specific. So I'm not sure that there's a requirement that the name is released. So giving deference to the district court, actually, in an amendment seems very appropriate to me. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that question, the bill would just, like I've mentioned several times, the bill would just make this like any other felony case. So it would be filed. There would not be a confidentiality order that would be in place. That last section, I think, deals specifically with an incest crime. So if you were charged with incest and that people would know that the charge was incest, you know, obviously the identity of the victim would be more easily ascertainable due to the nature of that charge. And so I think that the judge would have a little bit more discretion in that case. Call for the question.
All right. The question having been called on Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 178 do pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill
178
has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called for. All those in favor of the bill, please stand. Thank you. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger excused. Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
No.
Lickry.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman. Coleman.
Excuse.
Coleman excused. Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey. Harvey excused. Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
No.
Gagge.
Aye.
Kasparic. Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
No.
Reeder.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers. Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker excused. Mr. Speaker excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 24 aye, 32 no, 4 excused.
House Bill 178, having failed a roll call vote, House Bill 178 is indefinitely postponed.
Representative Patton.
Personal privilege?
Please proceed.
I saw lurking in our halls here a gentleman that is better known as the Apple Orchard King of the Goose Creek area and currently chairman, I believe, of the Sheridan County Commissioner, Steve Meyer, up in the back. Welcome, Steve.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 190. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 190 is presented by Representative Walters, an act relating to public defenders providing for posting fee schedules online, providing for the use of energy standard in court rules, repealing rulemaking authority for setting energy standards, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 190, Public Defender Fee Schedule and Industry Standard, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 190 do pass. And I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good gentleman from Casper.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is basically a cleanup bill. In the first part of it, changing 7-6-103 to require that the fee schedule be posted online. That was brought by the Public Defender's Office at their request. The second portion of the bill is to remove the reference to the agency rules regarding indigency and implement the rules the Supreme Court is already using in Rule 44D. Having it the way it is, we have a duplicative. This the rules are set twice, and we don't need that. So what is Rule 44D? I'll read that to you real quickly. Rule 44D starts out by referencing Statute 76103C, which describes the qualifications to be a public defender. It then goes on to say, a person is entitled to the appointment of counsel if, at the time counsel is needed, the person is unable to provide for the full payment of an attorney and all other necessary expenses of representation. In making a determination of eligibility, the judicial officer shall consider the probable cost of representation given the number and severity of the offenses charged and the factual and legal complexity of the case. Secondly, the defendant's income from all sources and the defendant's capacity to earn income. Third, the expenses of the defendant's household and whether a spouse or roommate contributes or ought to contribute to those expenses. Fourth, the defendant's responsibility for support of others. Fifth, the defendant's assets, whether held individually or with others. Sixth, the defendant's debts and periodic payments due on the debts. And seventh, the defendant's capacity to borrow money. Uncertainty as to the defendant's eligibility for appointment of counsel should be resolved in the defendant's favor, and an erroneous determination of eligibility may be corrected at any time. So that's what would be in place if this bill is passed. So as I said initially, this is just a cleanup bill, and I would urge for your vote in the favor. And I'd stand for questions.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, not any problems with this bill. I was just curious if you could tell me what the public defender's office, why they wanted the fee schedule posted, just if that discussion was had, which I'm sure it was.
Representative Walters?
When asked, they just said they thought it would be a good idea, and beyond that, they didn't expand.
Any further debate or discussion? Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. If it's just a good idea, why are we going to put just a good idea in statute? Can't they already just post it?
Be the first time that ever happened, put a good idea in statute. Representative Walters. No response. Representative, okay. Any further debate or discussion? Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that House Bill number 190 would have a due pass recommendation, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 190 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 143. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 143 is presented and introduced by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to game and fish, providing for rules and regulations to authorize the collection of road-killed animals, providing restrictions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 143, Game Roadkill, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Yeagy, Crone, and Piperinen, and it is signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Davison?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 143 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn the explanation over to my good friend from House District 43.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to present House Bill 143, Game Roadkill, today. What this bill does is simply set up a program by the Game and Fish Commission to allow roadkill animals to be removed from Wyoming's roads by our citizens. So going through the bill, it's fairly short. What we're doing is creating a new section, 23.310, where the commission is charged with creating a process to allow roadkill to be taken by citizens. There are basically three allowabilities, Either you can have a prior letter of authorization from the department where you've agreed to put a roadkill carcass to good use. You can have a valid scientific or educational collection permit for the roadkill, which the department already issues at this time. Or the third clause there from 14 to 23 on page 2 basically enables a certificate or tag issued by the department to allow you to take the carcass. On line 18, there is a provision that the department reserves the right to come inspect the animal either before you collect it, or you might have to bring it to a game and fish building, or the game warden can meet you somewhere before you're granted approval. Therefore, then on page 3, we set out some basic stipulations and provisions. Basically, the restriction says you can't take a bighorn sheep, you can't take a wildlife species that's covered under threatened and endangered, anything covered under the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty, or anything else that may be prevented by federal or state regulation or statute. In the Standing Committee amendment, we did add gray wolves, grizzly bears, and mountain goats to this section, that you can't collect those as roadkill carcasses. Well, I personally don't think anybody's going to be driving around trying to hit a grizzly bear. I suppose it is a possibility. So that's what the department brought in the Standing Committee amendment to add to the bill. At this time, I am going to talk about the Standing Committee amendment, and I am going to ask for a division if you have the amendment in front of you. And so, Mr. Chairman, the division would be Division 1, lines 1 through 6, and then lines 16 through 25, and Division 2 would be lines 7 through 15. And I'll await your ruling on that division.
Representative Zwanzer, I find that that is divisible and would start with Division 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Division 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment is where the first part we're inserting wolves on the trophy game area, as well as mountain goats and grizzly bears. As these are high value animals, the department just didn't want any kind of ambiguity that people would say they killed them and then ran over them, I suppose, and claimed that they were roadkill. It was an interesting committee meeting on these kind of things, Mr. Chairman, but I have no problem with that. As well, on 17 to 25, this is if you have a complete skull plate intact with the horns. Right now, the commission requires you to have an interstate game tag. Interstate game tag, just so they can track back where people, you know, got the full set of buck antlers, etc. And so if there are no questions on Division 1, I'd call for the question on that before talking about Division 2.
Seeing no questions, the question has been called. All those in favor of Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries on Division 1, and Division 1 is adopted. As to Division 2 on Standing Committee Amendment 1, Representative Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I am not going to follow my sword on this one. Division 2 basically pertains to the use of commercial use of these roadkill carcasses. My intent with bringing the bill was just to get the carcass off of the roadway. And so if there are people out there who want to collect elk teeth or hides or hooves or can find some use for an animal, if they process it to put it into commercial use. The popular one is like rabbit's feet medallions, I think are still kind of popular. I know they were in my youth. So I didn't want to necessarily restrict people from collecting these carcasses off the roadway and say they can never be put back into commercial use. I don't see the same maybe black helicopters that people are going to be trying to hit wildlife and then sell them for parts. But I'd leave it up to this body, but I'd ask you to defeat that part of the Standing Committee amendment because my intent with the bill really is to get the carcasses off the roadway.
Any discussion on Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, all those in favor of Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment 1, please signify by aye. Wow. All those opposed, no. Division 2 fails. Back to the main bill. Representative Zwanzer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know sometimes in the press this got a little bit away from me that it was all about eating edible roadkill. Really, the intent with this bill is to get it off of the highway system. It prevents other scavengers or raptors from picking apart these carcasses and causing other accidents. But if there's you find this allowability in 14 other states, our neighbors to the west, and the Peachtree State to the south just passed these types of bills in the last 2 years. And so I thought it was a good trend. It was brought by some people up in your neck of the woods, Mr. Chairman, that I think all the members of the gallery talked to the last couple of days in the lobby. So be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just have to, I can't figure out whether we need another amendment, so a question for the presenter, whether this covers mythical roadkill or not.
Representative Yagi.
And also another amendment. I didn't know if this was covered in the Food Freedom Act, this type of...
Or maybe it's confidential, the roadkill. It would be. It's hard. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have some problems with this. Page 2, starting at line 4, a letter of prior authorization from the department. To me, that sounds like a hunting license for your truck. If you have to get prior authorization to pick up roadkill, that sounds a little odd to me. And then a valid scientific or educational collecting permit. If you're collecting it for scientific or educational purposes, why would you run over it with a set of Goodyears, excuse me, a set of tires? I have some difficulty with the language. I know what the bringer of the bill is trying to accomplish, but the language with this prior and a donation certificate, to me, this really sounds like a hunting license for a vehicle. If I get a prior certificate, I can run over the biggest deer in the countryside and take it home. So I have some real problems with the language. I think I understand what the intent is, but I think the language needs some real work on it.
Representative Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pretty sure I can alleviate those concerns. Basically, Section 1, we're putting into law what is already going on with the department. Our game laws are rather restrictive on who can possess roadkill, and so basically this is an interagency thing that says currently a letter of prior authorization would be for other law enforcement officers, for game and fish officials, people that are already kind of predetermined to have a stake in getting roadkill off of the highway system. And so these would be letters of prior authorization that says every time you find a roadkill animal, if you're the agency responsible for clearing the roadways, you don't have to call the department to get it off of the roadway or to move it. Also in Section 2, these valid scientific or educational permits, they're already established in 23.1.302. So there are some like disease research organizations, including the Game and Fish and others, that already have these scientific permits that currently can collect roadkill off of the interstate system. So really 1 and 2, I know 2 is already in statute. The first section, it's already being done, and it's more of a safety mechanism that's an internal rule and reg for the department and other law enforcement officers to get this the carcasses off the roadway. The real crux of the bill is in Romanet 3 on line 14 of when you see a roadkill animal, or if you were to hit the animal, that you could call the department and get a tag over the phone, or the wildlife inspector could meet you there at the site depending what time of day or where, you know, in Wyoming you were. And so I hope that alleviated the concerns on Sections 1 and 2. Those are pretty much already standard practice internally with the department.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill, and I got a package today. I know we can't show props, but I got a package today from the land of the Tetons, and it says it's a roadkill grill seasonings. So it says makes all critters taste great. So if it doesn't taste quite good, you can buy this product somewhere and season up your roadkill. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, clarification. This letter of intent also is before you can move the animal, you know, you just don't load it in your truck and take it home. I'm going over fishing and hit a deer and throw it in. So I think the letter from the director or a person. And then there was a cougar that ran over by on the sisters, and I wanted to get that critter for my biology class, and so I went through this, and this is just standard procedure for getting an animal that you could use. So,
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm still confused then what we did in the amendment. Does the jackalope fall in Section B, or was that killed in Division 2 of the amendment?
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this measure doesn't get run over and we pick it up, I would suggest an amendment to the sponsor on page 3, subsection C. You state nothing in this act shall authorize the possession of any illegally taken wildlife or wildlife found dead due to causes other than motor vehicle collisions. Having a dear friend in the game and fish business, could be interpreted to be a pretty good defense if you had an illegally caught or captured wild game and use it as a saying it was motor vehicle collision. In the forest, that might be hard to explain, but it's worth a try.
Representative Eklund?
Part of what I don't understand is if you go get permission to remove the animal from the road, the highway I'm on, that animal would be so mangled that there's nothing to remove after a little while, and I guess I'm a little unclear on that unless you get permission a week before it gets hit or something. I don't know.
Representative Zwanzer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If anybody does find a roadkill jackalope on the highway system, let me know. I'll even come cook it for you. To address the concerns from the good representative from Sheridan in Section C on line 3, that was from the department to tighten up the language to make sure that it did have to be hit by a motor vehicle, that someone couldn't shoot it. Instead, it was roadkill, you know, and it was processed. So the department thought that was tightening it up, and I hope that addresses his concerns. To regard the other concerns from Laramie County just expressed, you know, this was brought by people up in the northwest part of the state where they hit bigger animals. I'm fully aware that if you hit an antelope or something, it's not really salvageable. I'm not sure what you'd need it for. You're certainly not going to eat it. But if you accidentally hit an elk or a moose and you hit that elk, you know, not to get graphic, but in the head and the meat's still good, or that moose or, you know, another large animal, I mean, same for a fox or a squirrel, I suppose, but you know, we have to keep in mind there's a variety of wildlife this covers. It doesn't cover livestock. It doesn't cover domestic pets. And so there are animals out there at times that you would like removed from the roadway. Either you hit it and want to take it, or you've seen it hit recently, or it's been, you know, recent. There's lots of horror stories about, I mean, I know I've driven the highway system, and I see the same carcass for 5 or 6 days. Can't do anything, but I hope that addresses those concerns as well.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was for the good representative from House District 19, and he left. He was talking about a cougar that he had some interest in for a class at school, so he called and got permission to do that. Sounds like there's a process in place right now, and do we need this legislation if, in fact, you have that available to you? But he's not here to answer the question. He's out counting votes.
Representative Zwanzer.
Yeah, thank you. Just to address that concern, Mr. Chairman, on page 2, lines 10, that's where the valid scientific or educational collecting permit comes into place, and that's, from what I understand, how he would qualify, because it's for an educational purpose. And the department does offer these now, if you can, you know, prove it's for an educational purpose under 23.1.302A. So.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Davison's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Bill Number 143 do pass, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 143 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole rising and reporting, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 95, recommended, do pass. House Bill 127, amended. recommended do pass. House Bill 25, recommended do pass. House Bill 186, recommended do pass. House Bill 188, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. House Bill 149, recommended do pass. House Bill 56, recommended do pass. House Bill 108, amended. And further amended.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And further amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 151, recommended do pass. House Bill 167, recommended do pass. House Bill 178. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Okay. House Bill 190, recommended do pass. House Bill 143, amended, recommended do pass. And it's Representative Crone, signature as chairman.
Representative Crone.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Crone. We're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 4, Livestock Disease Reporting and Liability. Ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 146, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 47, School Finance Amendments. Ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 147. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 57, Highway Speed Limit Increase. Ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 148, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 69, the Omnibus Water Bill Construction, Ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 149, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 80, State Auditor Employee Payment Method Amendments, Ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 150. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 94, Public Library Endowment Challenge Program Extension. Ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 151, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 95, High School Graduation Requirements, Ayes 14, noes 16. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 152, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 54, Limited Alcoholic Beverage Permit, Ayes 6, noes 24, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 153, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 55, Energy and Natural Resource Education Initiative, Ayes 22, noes 8. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 154. The bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File Number 96, Compulsory School Attendance. Ayes 12, noes 18. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 175, Juvenile Citations, Notification by Law Enforcement, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Halverson, Croker, Crone, and Miller. Those no, Representatives Bakery, Gingery, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 197, Summary Procedure for Distribution of Decedent's Property. Respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Private Property Protection, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, one no, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Number 4, Foreign Law Prohibition, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Watt. Those who voted no, Representatives Connolly, Gingery, Crone, and Walters, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 53, State Land Violations, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, and Dans Wallinser, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 84, Livestock Fence Repairs, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, and Dans Wallinser, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 117, Administrative Rules, Takings Assessment, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, Dans Wallinser, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blickery, Byrd, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dans Wallinser. One no, Representative Gay. One excuse, Representative Berger. Signed by Representative Bilkrey, Vice Chairman.
We're at that order of business of re-referral of bills.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, re-refers House Bill 26 to committee number 2, Appropriations. There's an appropriation from the Appraiser Board Fund on there.
Without objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business of committee announcements. Room 204 is full. As a result, room 302 will be used for audio streaming of the hearing that's about to occur in room 302, which means that the committee chairman's meeting, which was scheduled for room 302, is now in room House 18. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two, Appropriations, will hear re-referred bills tomorrow, Wednesday, January 23rd at 8 a.m. We will hear House Bill 65, Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation, House Bill 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities, and House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. We will hear those at 8 a.m. And then 10 minutes upon adjournment, Mr. Speaker, we will hear House Bill 81, Large Project Funding, and House Bill 163, Adjunct Professor Incentives, and any other bills that are re-referred before adjournment tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number six will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30, and we'll hear House Bill 120, Game and Fish Violations Restitution, House Bill 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts, House Bill 135, Snowmobile Permit and Fees 2.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, room H18, to hear Bills 63, State Primacy on Greenhouse Gas Regulation, and House Bill 140, Environmental Quality Act Permit Intervention.
Chairman's Wanitzer, sir.
Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet in about 10 minutes in H17 to discuss the following bills. House Bill 150, Bonds for Certificate of Title. House Bill 142, Vehicle Identification Number Inspections. House Bill 192, Cancer Awareness License Plates. And House Bill 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room 817 to discuss House Bill 203, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee.
Members of the 62nd, if you have any bills that you want introduced and read in, get them into me. We have some committees who are running out of work. If we don't get the House bills in, we'll start reading in Senate files probably tomorrow or the next day just to make sure that the committees stay full of work. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was in error. I meant to note that House Bill 140 will not be heard tomorrow morning, and we will reschedule that at a future date.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
General file for tomorrow. House Bill 98, 61, 62, 133, 175, 197, House Joint Resolution 3, House Joint Resolution 4, House Bill 53, 84, 117, 172, 147, 93, and 94. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until tomorrow, January 23rd, 2013, at 10 o'clock.
Very good job, ladies and gentlemen. We've hit our stride. The state of Wyoming should be very proud of the high-quality debate that we had today, although sometimes somewhat mythical. You have heard the motion that we adjourn until tomorrow, January 23rd, 2013, at 10 a.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House will be adjourned.